Chapter 56. A strange mist, a swirling reddish mist, curtained off the light and swam thickly in front of Pitt's eyes. Once, twice, several times, he tried desperately to struggle through to the other side, reaching out in front of him like a blind man. There had been no time to prepare for the shock, no time for his mind to comprehend, no time even to wonder. He wiped away the claret that trickled over his brows and probed a gash on his forehead 4 inches long and, thankfully, not skull deep. Pitt dragged himself to his feet, staring in disbelief at the litter of bodies around him. Rudy Gunn's pale face looked up at Pitt, eyes lost and uncomprehending, and devoid of expression. He swayed on hands and knees, muttering softly. Oh God, what happened?
I don't know, Pitt answered in a strained voice, foreign even to himself. I don't know.
On shore, Shaw froze in hunched paralysis, lips compressed until his mouth no longer showed, face contorted in blind and bitter rage, a bitterness directed at his own sense of guilt. Ignoring Vion's order to leave Canada, he had set up camp on the eastern tip of Father's Point, 2.5 miles from the salvage site. He had assembled a British Army S-66 long-range reconnaissance scope that could read a newspaper headline at 5 miles, and had begun the tedious routine of observing the small fleet of ships moored over the Empress of Ireland. Launches were charging back and forth between the two naval vessels like ferries held to a schedule. Shaw amused himself by imagining the heated negotiations going on between the American and Canadian officers. The Ocean Venturer appeared still and dead. No one moved about its decks, but he could clearly see that the derrick was still in operation as its huge winch pulled up slime-covered scrap from the hulk below. Shaw sat back to rest his eyes for a moment and munch a couple of candy bars that passed for breakfast. He noticed a small outboard hydroplane coming down the river at great speed, somewhere between 90 and 100 miles an hour as it blasted off the wave tops and trailed a 10-foot rooster tail in its wake. His curious nature aroused, he turned the scope on it. The hull was painted a metallic gold with a burgundy stripe that flared at the stern. The effect was that of an arrow as it banked and tracked into the sun. Shaw waited until the glare subsided, and then he zeroed in on the driver. The single figure behind the windscreen wore goggles, but Shaw recognized the squat nose, the cold, hard face. It was Foss Gly. Shaw gazed fascinated as the hydroplane cut a large circle around the three ships, leaping clear of the water with only the props submerged, then thumping down with a kettle-drum impact that carried to where Shaw was standing. It was difficult to keep the scope trained on the bouncing boat, but he locked in when it swung on an opposite course and gave him a clear view of the exposed cockpit over the transom. Gly was clutching the wheel with his right hand while his left hand held aloft a small box. A thin shaft gleamed in the sun, and Shaw identified it as an antenna. No! he shouted to the unhearing wind as the awful truth of Gly's intent struck him. No, damn you, no! Suddenly the stillness of the morning was shattered by a rumbling thunder that seemed to come from far away and then heighten with terrible swiftness, and a cauldron of boiling water erupted and burst toward the sky around the Ocean Venturer as the explosives on the bow of the Empress detonated. The research vessel seemed to porpoise above the maelstrom, hang suspended for a few seconds, and then fall back on its starboard side, down, down, until it seemed to drown under the massive column of water. Even on shore, the violence of the explosion was shocking. Shaw steadied himself on the tripod of the scope and stared, numb with disbelief. The spray rose whitely in a vast cloud, swirling above the masts of Huron and Phoenix, fighting gravity and finally raining in a drenching torrent that entirely saturated the superstructures of both ships. There wasn't a man left standing on any deck. They were all knocked flat or overboard by the force of the blast. When Shaw retrained the scope on Gly, the hydroplane was hurtling far up the river toward Quebec. Stony-faced, bitter at his helplessness, Shaw could only watch in agonized frustration as Gly once again escaped. He turned back to the Ocean Venturer. It looked like a dead ship. Its stern had settled ominously, and its hull was heeled far over to starboard.
Slowly and frighteningly, the derrick teetered crazily sideways, hung, then ponderously toppled over the side with a great splash, leaving an incredible tangle of debris and cable heaped on the decks. God only knew how many men had been killed or maimed inside the steel walls. Shaw could not bear to see any more. He picked up the scope and walked heavily away from the shoreline, the deep rumble of the explosion rolling across the river and echoing back in his ears.